The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. The United States has over 30,000 nuclear weapons at home, at sea, in Europe, and in Asia. And of course, that isn't anywhere near enough. We're still building more. Of these nuclear weapons, would you believe, of all of them possessed, that 8,500 weapons are considered strategic and that 22,000 are tactical, and the main difference between those is simply the difference in range. Tactical nuclear weapons have a shorter range but are sometimes more powerful than strategic weapons. In our age of overkill, you've got to be careful the way you try to define exactly what is the size of the nuclear arsenal of the big powers of the world. It's easy to talk about overkill 50 times over, as opposed to a more accurate 20 times over. But really, does it make any difference at all about how many times we're able to annihilate all of humankind today? On the last broadcast, I was talking about the new era into which we now enter, where more and more nations are lining up to join the atomic or the nuclear club, and where the likelihood of nuclear weapons falling into the hands of various ultra-extremist groups, even being hijacked or stolen, being lost or being detonated accidentally through a collision or something of the kind, becomes ever more possible. The risks of some kind of a nuclear war being joined today are far greater than they were a decade or so ago, when we were all made so aware of nuclear destructive potential, when we heard about backyard fallout shelters, we heard about multi-megatonnage, we heard such terms as ground zero, we heard about the children in schools having to practice what to do in the case of an A-bomb attack. But now, with all the passing years, the nuclear arsenals of the Soviet Union, of the United States, of the other nuclear powers of the world, of France, of Britain, of Red China, and others now joining the nuclear club, have grown and grown and grown. As of mid-1975, the 8,500 U.S. strategic nuclear weapons were on the following multiple warhead carrying delivery vehicles, MIRVs. That is the 1,054 U.S. land-based Minuteman and Titan missiles, and 656 Polaris Poseidon missiles on the 41 United States ballistic missile submarines. The Soviet Union and the United States have achieved a kind of a stalemate. Our Polaris submarines carrying ballistic missiles that can be fired from beneath the sea ring the Soviet Union. They prowl the underseas around Vladivostok and clear up in the Arctic ice cap area and off Murmansk and off Norway and in the Mediterranean, while Russian subs ply the oceans off the Pacific and the Atlantic and the Gulf coasts of the United States. There are nearly 500 United States SAC bombers, all of whom carry nuclear warheads in their bomb bays, up to three times the destructive power of all force unleashed by all participants in World War II. So bombers can carry one World War II, or two World War IIs, or three or more World War IIs in destructive capacity. And we got 500 of those. Now, we've been producing strategic nuclear weapons at the rate of about three a day for the past 4 years. There are 365 days in the year, times four, times three. You figure it out. When is enough enough? You begin to wonder. Now, it costs an enormous amount of money. The deadly game of how to deploy all of those weapons, of where to store them, and into whose hands they might fall, doesn't seem to occur to people, or at least doesn't occur to be serious enough that those who are responsible for it are willing to do anything about it. But every single day we are adding another three strategic nuclear weapons. That merely means, when it says strategic, perhaps a longer range than the tactical, which is shorter range, but we're adding these multi-megaton H-bombs at the rate of three a day. And did you know that American nuclear warheads are stored in more than 100 special sites in Europe? 100 different sites in Europe. Now they're supposed to be under heavy guard. They're behind barbed wire and they're floodlit and they've got armed guards there. But you know, some of those weapons are always loaded and armed and ready to unleash a nuclear blast. They have to be ready on a moment's notice in the case of some Soviet attack, which appears to be very unlikely, but on the other hand, the defense strategists in Europe are very concerned right now about American resolve and about some new ploy by the Soviet Union to follow up an imagined advantage as a result of Vietnam. There are about 11.5 censored pages on nuclear weaponry that survived in a 27-page report on United States security issues in Europe, and that was made public not long ago by a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Security Agreements and Commitments Abroad. It was based on a three-week study in Europe in September by certain members of that staff. The published account showed that there is a 7,000 figure on U.S. nuclear warheads in Europe, and that was being used clear back in 1966. It's been varied up and down by others who have made similar statements. That was clear back during the Robert McNamara era. As of July 31st, land-based nuclear warheads were stored at over 100 special sites in Western Europe. Now, in a typical NATO storage site, the warheads would be in igloos or maintenance and assembly buildings. The site would be surrounded by a double perimeter fence, which is floodlit. United States forces would control the entry to the storehouses, and the outer perimeter guard would be usually guarded by the user nation, which means German troops, French troops, Belgian, Dutch, perhaps British. Interesting, isn't it? Hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of American nuclear warheads are stored inside West Germany with German guards. It's just kind of interesting. Just kind of sit around and speculate about that a minute and just wonder what that might mean at some time in the future. At least it's worth wondering about. As a matter of fact, that Senate committee, at least an investigating committee and certain staff members, was allowed to visit some of those sites, and they asked whether the U.S. officers controlling release of Allied planes armed with nuclear weapons could prevent the Allied pilot from dropping his nuclear bomb once his plane was airborne. They wouldn't answer because the answer was censored, so we'll never know the answer to that. So if a West German fighter bomber takes off with an American-made nuclear multi-megaton weapon aboard, they wouldn't answer whether or not he could be prevented from dropping it once he was airborne. But other sources indicated that if necessary, such a plane could be ordered shot down. I think that's interesting. All you do is say, shoot him down. Oh, fine. Let's do it. Where is he? How do you find it? Well, radar. Fine. But maybe he's got radar jamming equipment. They're pretty important and pretty sophisticated type of equipment they've got aboard some of these F-4s that we ourselves have sent over there, and other types are being built. As a matter of fact, some of the supersonic jet aircraft that the Germans are producing themselves will be carrying nuclear warheads under the auspices of NATO, no doubt. But that Senate report stated that basic NATO strategy for both conventional nuclear warfare was set forth in a document known only by its serial number that talked about nuclear deterrent, about forward defense and flexible response. If that deterrence failed to prevent war, the present doctrine, and I'm going to be talking to the architect of the strategic defense arrangements for all of NATO in a matter of days at NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium. If that deterrent failed to prevent war, then the present idea is that three different levels of military response would occur. They're defined as being direct defense, that is, defeating the enemy on the level at which he chooses to fight, or conditioned response. Then a concept that includes the use of all available nuclear weapons authorized either on a pre-planned or a case-by-case basis. Meaning, if you understand that one major city in Europe is wiped out, then you wipe out one major city in the Soviet Union. Then if they wipe out another city, you wipe out another city. It's kind of like some of the old cartoons you see with the fellow standing there impatiently painting the other guy in the face. And he waits until he's all through and the paintbrush is put down and they stare at each other. Then he very deliberately reaches over, takes the paintbrush out of his hand, slaps him in the face with it. It's all very hilarious when it's nothing but cartoon comedy. But it seems to be somehow a little bit unreal when it's actually, as a matter of documentation, drawn up as a part of the defense strategy for Europe. This conditioned response of waiting to see what the enemy does, and we do exactly back to him what he's done to us. The third kind of military response, the report claimed, was called a general nuclear response. That is, massive nuclear strikes against the total nuclear threat, other military targets, and urban industrial targets. It's unbelievable, isn't it, that we've got all these thousands upon thousands of nuclear weapons, but we don't have enough. We're building 3 or 4 a day. And we've got them stored in more than 100 sites in Europe. They're aboard aircraft carriers and other vessels around the seas of the world. They're in the bomb bays of our bombers. And they're also aboard ships of the Soviet Union and in the bellies of Soviet submarines as well as American. They're deployed all over the Soviet Union, all the way from way over in the northeastern part of the most remote tundra of permafrost in the Soviet Union, clear down into Soviet Russia or Georgia or Byelorussia or Azerbaijan and the European satellites. They rest in their missile silos from the Dakotas to Florida and from California to Maine, all over the United States. So around the world today, there is enough nuclear explosive force to more than wipe out all human life many, many times over. It's impossible to even define, actually. It's almost impossible to say exactly what are the realistic statistics on nuclear overkill. But one thing is certain, that in any nuclear attack on big cities, the entirety of that city is virtually rendered inoperable, uninhabitable, and you can simply write it off simply because of all that would occur in the explosion of just a 1 megaton bomb. Now, 1 megaton bomb would cause such severe blast damage it would literally wipe out about 70 square kilometers or 40 square miles. The radius would be an incredible amount of miles out away from ground zero so far as what it literally does to the entirety of the city. It doesn't matter whether it's leveled or not. We're talking about the explosive force that would shatter glass, would rock buildings, would kill people, knock them off their feet, and we're talking about not only blast damage, but radiation and fires. And no fire department could cope with thousands of fires all at once. And in such a situation, they spread rapidly. But the shock itself, if it digs a crater a mile across and 300 feet deep, would totally disrupt all of your water lines, and the gas lines would erupt, and they would start burning, and the sewage effluent would flow. In some of the incendiary bomb raids in World War II, maybe you didn't read much about some of those, but did you know the one time about 100,000 people died in Tokyo? There was the horrible Holocaust that occurred in one very famous city in Germany in World War II. But the firestorm, and when you read about what happened in those cases, it's absolutely incredible. The oxygen needed to feed those flames rushing in actually caused winds of over 200 miles an hour, created an absolute hurricane. Buildings were leveled, people, cattle, and vehicles swept up and hurled into the maelstrom by a firestorm. In such a firestorm, the combined heat of many individual fires makes a tremendous wind toward the center of the city, which fans the flames. When many fires are started at once by a single flash of an H-bomb, the number of casualties per square mile by burning or suffocation in the firestorm would probably be as high or higher as in the central blast area itself. And only those on the very edge of the firestorm might be able to struggle to safety, and then they are likely to suffer from fallout. Now, the inescapable fact is that the nuclear armories that are already in existence contain huge multi-megaton weapons, every one of which has a destructive power greater than all the conventional explosives ever used in the history of warfare since the day gunpowder was ever invented. Why do we keep building more? Well, apparently we have to because the Soviet Union builds more. Have we got enough to more than wipe out the Soviet Union? Oh, sure, 6 or 8 times maybe, maybe 20 times. But we have to have more because that impresses people, that frightens people. That is an arm of policy that makes people know that you're a nuclear giant, not only a giant, but a mega giant, a multi-giant, a giant among giants. So we're building them every single day at enormous cost, at enormous risk, and the risk grows greater every single day. It's very little publicized and understood, the fact that nearly 22,000 U.S. tactical nuclear weapons are in the possession of U.S. armed forces widely dispersed all around the world? 22,000 of them, of incredible capacity, every one of them way bigger by many, many times over than the bomb that had completely annihilated Hiroshima. In Europe, the United States and its NATO allies have 2,250 aircraft, missile launchers, and nuclear cannons that can deliver 7,000 U.S. tactical nuclear weapons stored in more than 100 separate areas, tremendous concentration of them in West Germany. And those weapons carry a combined explosive capability equivalent to an estimated 460 megatons. That's 460 million tons of TNT. Roughly 35,000 times bigger than the nuclear weapon that destroyed all of Hiroshima. Now, they're in the NATO European countries. And that doesn't mean Norway, Denmark, Luxembourg. Oh, yeah, that's right. France doesn't even allow U.S. bombs there because they have their own tactical nuclear weapons in France. So an enormous number of those are in West Germany. There are some 200,000 U.S. military personnel still based in West Germany, and that's where the largest number of all these nuclear bombs are concentrated. U.S. tactical nuclear weapons in Europe include all types of surface-to-surface missiles, like the one called Honest John or Pershing, Lance, and Sargent. There are two different sizes of nuclear artillery shells, the 155mm and the 203. There are over 500 United States nuclear-capable fighter bombers, and they can be loaded with air-to-surface missiles and bombs. The largest tactical nuclear missile has 400 kilotons, or over 400,000 tons in explosive power. That's equivalent to 30 Hiroshimas. That's the way you talk about nuclear power. Like wiping out 30 Hiroshimas, 92,000 people times 30. The Pershing surface-to-surface missile and nuclear-loaded fighter bomber are capable of attacking targets inside the Soviet Union from Western Europe. Now, the Soviet military forces in Europe are very prodigious, too. They have about 3,500 tactical nuclear weapons stored along the other side of the Iron Curtain that are aimed at the heart of Western Europe. The United States has approximately 7,000 strategic and tactical nuclear weapons at any moment at sea. There are 284 ships and submarines in the U.S. Navy that carry nuclear weapons. And it's a conservative estimate that there are at least 2,500 of them at sea. This number of weapons carries an explosive punch equivalent to about 150 million tons of TNT, or more than 75 times all the bombs we ever dropped on Germany and Japan in World War II. And over 90% of that is on the 14 U.S. aircraft carriers. Times have really changed, haven't they? I remember working so many times down in the ammunition storage areas aboard an aircraft carrier and sliding these bombs along and getting these pulleys and raising these 500 and 1,000 pounders up and putting them in their bins and handing from hand one to the other the 100-pound anti-personnel type bombs looking like so many welded rings together. Seeing them come aboard from our support vessels at sea offshore Korea. But we didn't carry any nuclear weapons in those days. And even though they existed in 1950 and 51 and 52, they didn't exist anywhere near in the numbers they do today. There weren't as many nations with nuclear capacity as there are today, and the likelihood for accident, the likelihood for some completely irresponsible government simply stealing such weapons, the likelihood for more and more nations that are in themselves irresponsible of joining the atomic club wasn't anywhere near so great at that time. Are such weapons ever going to be used? Do you know the Bible says they will be? There has never been a weapon invented that has not been used, all the way from a club or a rock to the bow and arrow to the crossbow to the machine gun or the Gatling gun, which was supposed to be the ultimate weapon, right on down to the nuclear bomb, which has already been used twice in our lifetime. Are these nuclear weapons going to be used in the future? The Bible talks about a war that is called Armageddon. And when you listen to the United States and the Soviet arsenal descriptions, it sounds like a potential Armageddon. You know, they talk about war games these days. We have a game called war. That's where thousands and thousands of troops and planes and ships all massed and pretend that a battle is underway. Well, they had one such NATO game. It was called a war game. They called this one White Card or Carte Blanche. And it only lasted for 48 hours because people don't figure wars would last much longer than that anymore. And during that war game, NATO forces apparently simulated 335 tactical nuclear weapons explosions, 268 of them on German territory. And then they pretended to assess what the damage would be. And a very conservative estimate placed Germans killed at between 1.5 to 1.7 million, with an additional 3.5 million people totally disabled and wounded. And these were limited tactical war games, which showed that as many German casualties would occur in 48 hours as occurred in all 6 years and more of World War II. Now, what is the risk of developing these nuclear weapons and deploying them? And some of them now even called mini nukes. That's a small nuclear weapon because the idea is that it creates a kind of an illusion which says that a limited nuclear war might be fought, might be contained in one area instead of proliferating around the world. So they have these 155-millimeter howitzers that no longer send just explosive or armor-piercing shells several miles away, but can actually lob nuclear bombs. And they've been introduced. And the trend is for more of that type of thing, tactical or limited nuclear weapons, mini-nukes they call them. They're supposed to be smaller and cleaner, meaning that fewer people die from fallout. And they're supposed to be ever more accurate. So that adds to the dangerous idea that tactical nuclear weapons could be used in some kind of a war in a limited sense without any real risk of escalation. But you know, the idea of a limited nuclear war may be one of the most foolish ideas that has ever been in the minds of some of those tacticians and planners in NATO, the United States, and the Soviet Union alike. Because whether or not you can guarantee that any war is going to be limited, short of the desire of the participants to escalate it, and why people are going to simply play war according to certain rules of some kind of a bizarre game when it involves multi-megaton nuclear weapons, well, I really doubt that. We need to realize that if such weapons ever are used in any numbers at all, that hundreds upon hundreds of millions of people will be killed, and all civilization as we know it today, all organized community life will inevitably come to an end in any countries involved in such conflict. Those who survive the immediate destruction would suffer from such long-term effects of radiation so as to maim and distort grotesquely, cause loss of hair, loss of fertility or virility. It would cause all kinds of dietary problems. And those who survived even the agonies of those many, many years, even on into several generations, would transmit long-term effects of irradiation to their offspring, which would lay a genetic burden on generation after generation to come. And yet we go right on building them. It's amazing to me what people's priorities are. You can hear of long lines of screaming farmers that want more money. You can hear of the incredible, unbelievable spectacle of some of the leftist labor unions in Britain, with Britain practically on the rocks, and yet they demand and want astounding 32% wage increases when Britain's inflation rate is already 21.2%, the highest in all of Western Europe, and the price of British goods so high, the demand from abroad is dwindling, unemployment over 800,000 and rising, a foreign trade deficit doubled last month to more than 665 million, and where are people's priorities? They're on snatching, grabbing at life right now, living for the moment, this summer, this month. I want mine right here and right now. So Britain muddles along through one economic crisis after another, and recently the British Prime Minister on television was answering who was at the helm. He said, "I am." He tried to calm everybody down by claiming nothing has really happened. He accused the Britons of rushing around like so many wet hens as though some devastating crisis had hit. Oh, there's no crisis in Britain, is there? It's just the sick man of Europe. It has lost all of its former greatness and its stature following World War II. A terrible attack on the pound recently. It fell to a record low, $2.29, and that's only the top of the iceberg. As I said, the inflation rate is the highest in all of Europe, making it virtually the highest on the face of the earth. And at the same time, unemployment soars, the foreign trade deficit doubles, and the insatiable quest by powerful leftist trade unions for an ever larger slice of the economic pie, workers screaming for more money. Our priorities are incredible. It seems wherever you look, we have these minor headaches and problems and heartaches and hang-ups that we want to become virtually violent over. But I don't know. As I look around at all these demonstrators rushing into the street, I remember so vividly all the cities in flames because of racial discrimination. I remember vividly the assassination of some of the leaders of the United States, leaders in the civil rights movement, Medgar Evers and Martin Luther King. And I remember so well the assassination, and I was so shocked when I saw the other day the person who committed the crime is going to be set a date. Now, maybe that's thrown up in the 1980s somewhere, but nevertheless, the idea of setting a date for the person who killed another presidential candidate and his assassinated brother, who was the president, that's incredible all by itself. And of course, they were very proud of themselves for not having made any difference between a person who would kill one of the top leaders of the land as opposed to someone who would simply kill a neighbor or a friend. But then that's the law. But it's the priorities that have me amazed. That here we're building up to three of these nuclear bombs every single day. We've already got thousands upon thousands of them deployed. They're all around the world. They're in more than 100 sites inside Europe. Most of those right inside West Germany. And yet, we don't have enough. We've got overkill up to 10, 20, 30, or 50 times. It doesn't matter how you analyze it. I don't care whether someone says we can kill 50 worlds like ours. I still say once is plenty. Whether it's 2 times, 10 times, or 50 times, it's just a lot of argument, a lot of rhetoric. The real dilemma today is that we live in a time of a potential for nuclear terrorism. Even a handful of terrorists with a kind of a homemade, and we now enter that time, a homemade nuclear bomb or a hijacked nuclear bomb could cause thousands of deaths in a city like New York. As a matter of fact, such casualties, if it were to be exploded somewhere in Manhattan, would combine all the total war dead of the whole Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican War, the U.S. Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War with just one bomb exploded by a handful of terrorists. That'd be 1.5 million people who would die. And there are more than 50 major terrorist groups existing worldwide. It's quite a day in which we live, and Bible prophecy indicates those bombs will be used, but on beyond any such war, it also tells what the outcome is going to be. Well, I've got to break off for lack of time, but I hope you get your name on the mailing list of the current number of The Plain Truth and find out where we go from here. I'm going to be reporting from NATO as the summit conference, and President Ford will be there. I expect to be able to attend the press conference and perhaps obtain some of the live, on-the-spot radio reports from Brussels very shortly. So be sure to request The Plain Truth, and remember, it's absolutely free. There is no charge.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.